Welcome to Financial Perspectives, the podcast. Join the team at Foster Group and our expert guests as we explore a variety of subjects that could impact your financial life. We will cover timely economic and financial market news, a wide range of personal financial planning ideas, and investment topics. Ultimately, we want to encourage educated optimism and do our best to provide valuable insights to help you navigate your financial journey with confidence. Please stick around at the end for important disclosure information. More information about Foster Group can be found in our ADV brochure at fostergrp.com.
Well, hello and welcome to Financial Perspectives. Our topic today is retirement income and how to plan for it. You know, for most of us, we work, we save, we invest with hopes that we're going to accumulate enough money to have the option someday to stop working for a paycheck and then have the flexibility to retire, which usually means more time for other things as well as more flexibility. So one important question is, what will it take to fund this next chapter of our lives? Many people in our audience have expressed an interest in this subject, so I'm looking forward to talking with Marcus Iowig. Here's Marcus. He's a senior lead advisor at Foster Group, and I want to know how he and other advisors help people approach the subject, from planning long before income is needed through maintaining it for however long we live, and possibly funding even other goals for children and charities beyond our lifetimes. It's a big topic.
Mm-hmm.
So Marcus, just so you know, he's a CPA as well, and as a senior lead advisor, has provided a lot of wise financial counsel to many clients. So Marcus, welcome.
Thanks
for being here.
Good to be
Looking
here.
Looking forward to having your share your expertise and your experience with us today. So let's just jump in here, because one of the big things we talk about is, well, this is all in the future.
Right.
So how does someone forecast what they're actually going to need in
right.
terms of a lifetime income?
Yeah, I think there's one myth out there that, you know, your expenses will go down when you retire. And the reality is, over all the years I've been doing this, that rarely happens. Most of the time, a good starting spot is, what are you spending today in maybe the latter years of your working years? And reflecting that forecasting that forward, that tends to be a pretty good barometer. So we think that's a good place to start, and then to think about maybe some of the additional things you want to do in retirement. Because the reality is, most of the time, if spending changes, it goes up for a little while more than down. So
yeah, so that's always interesting. I know that's maybe not encouraging to everyone,
yeah.
but it is kind of true. We see it. So aside from the monthly kind of keeping the doors open, your regular
yeah.
expenses, what other kinds of things should people be thinking about when they're planning for that income need in the future?
Yeah, you know, those are the ones that people kind of can, you know, pinpoint the easiest. Their take-home pay is a pretty good barometer for what am I spending each month. But the things that people often kind of leave out of the mix or aren't thinking about is giving to charity or to kids. You know, it's like those things are often not thought about, and then they get into retirement and go, wait, am I going to keep doing this? Am I going to do it the same level? Am I going to do it less? And then as people enter retirement, often their children are maybe getting out of college or in their young adulthood, and they start to have some ideas about how they could help them or help their grandkids, which is amazing, but you want to capture those things. You know, other things people tend to miss are those lumpy spends, you know, cars, vacations. And that's because sometimes those are funded out of things that aren't, you know, a regular paycheck. Maybe it's a year-end bonus or a stock sale for an executive, or things like that that are just, you know, kind of easy to miss when you're trying to get your head around, what do we need every year?
Mm-hmm. So when you're asking people that question, hey, what do we need? What do they need when they come in to kind of help answer that question?
Yeah, well, there's really no good replacement for tracking your spending with a budgeting software. Mm-hmm. I know budget's like, it should be a four-letter word, but people hate that word, but it really is helpful, and it doesn't need to be overly cumbersome. The reason that it's the most helpful is you tend to capture those lumpy things along the way. You also get a sense for what you can turn on and off, what's required to spend every month and what's not, and that can be helpful as you enter retirement. But if you're not gonna do that, you haven't, or maybe you're just unwilling to, because I've heard that before, using your pay stubs or a tax return can be a good guide to help you get your head around what you might be spending. And I would definitely recommend looking at 2 or 3 years worth of those to get that number.
Okay. So how precise do you think people need to be?
Oh, that's a tough one, but it's a great question. So, you know, we call it the illusion of precision here at Foster Group, because we don't need to be overly precise, but you know, what you want to make sure is you're not way off, you know, whether that's a, you know, 20%+, that's hard to say, but you want to avoid a big miss. And so, you know, from time to time you work with somebody who gets into retirement and they're spending measurable dollars above what they thought for whatever reason. Maybe it's a lifestyle change they didn't expect. So you don't need to be really precise. We don't need to be down to the dollar, 10 or hundreds of dollars, but we need to be within, you know, a few thousand dollars is probably a good barometer of, you know, what's a good precision mark.
I know that some people are put off by this idea of really getting precise or tracking, but there are a lot of good tools out there to do it. I mean, there's different ways to do it. I know for Kim and I, we've used a program called Quicken for years, which is really helpful getting the detail. It automatically downloads from our credit cards and bank statements. Yeah. So we can actually track and categorize spending. Some people will look at like credit card statements. Yep. So just if they make all of their expenditures off a credit card statement, you just go get those credit card statements, lay them down every couple months and say, okay, how much are we spending? But it is a bit of a challenge, but it's I know that we've found as we think about the future, having an estimate that we feel confident in about that spending has helped us just feel a lot better about our overall financial plan. I think you talked about cash flow being the cornerstone of a good financial plan.
Yeah.
We really believe that that's super helpful when people can get close.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. And I'm biased, but I think with the tools that are out there today, those softwares make it super easy. I tell everybody, if you're willing to commit 15 minutes a week, you're going to get a really well-rounded understanding of your spending, and it's going to raise your confidence, but also your advisor's confidence that you can retire.
Yeah. So speaking of things that give you confidence or things that might not give you confidence, when you think about kind of the unexpecteds, the things that could happen in retirement, sometimes we talk about, hey, we need to plan for kind of a margin for error.
Right.
Things that could go sideways or that are just unanticipated.
Yeah.
What are some examples of things you've seen happen?
Great question. And yeah, I'd say, first of all, margin for error, there's no right answer to that. That's very specific to each client based on their balance sheet and their needs. But you definitely want a margin for error, because in almost every client situation, there's going to be something unexpected. If you're going to be retired 20 to 30 years, I promise you it's not going to go exactly as you thought it was. So some really good real life examples are, I had a client who moved cities to be closer to children because their children had relocated. So as they wrapped up their career, they moved to a place they were excited to be but didn't have a lot of experience in. Mm-hmm. And they got there, and for various reasons I won't go into, the neighborhood they ended up in was not what they thought. And it was a problem, you know, it was a problem for them. And they needed to make a move. And that move required a higher spend to get to a better place. That was completely unexpected. It was significant, and they needed the margin of error to make that work. Another one is that I had a client whose their child was married. Their child's spouse was the sole breadwinner, and they passed away at a young age unexpectedly. Mm. And it wasn't, hey, we would like to help. It was, hey, we are going to help. Mm-hmm. And that was made possible because we had margin for error. So. And of course, there's the standard ones like long-term care, which is a very, again, there's a lot of ways to think about protecting that. But that's the one a lot of people bring up. But we see so many other ones, you know, that you people don't realize your life will change and you want margin for error.
Yeah. So. As I think about it, maybe margin for error is not necessarily the right term, because it's just a margin for the unexpected.
Absolutely.
Or the things you know things will happen, you just don't know which ones will.
For sure.
I had a client who... he introduced us to his sister, I think it was a sister, maybe an aunt, when she was 101 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
So she had outlived, you know. She was still shoveling her front walk at 101. She was an incredible lady. I remember meeting with her. But, you know, she ended up passing at 103. But a lot of times people just, they don't anticipate living that long.
Right, that's 20 years.
But she was healthy, you know, sound mind, sound body, obviously, but she needed income that was going to last beyond probably what she would have expected
for sure
earlier in her life. So those are great stories, but again, they just kind of show the meaning or the reason for, let's have some kind of excess there for the unexpected,
basically. For sure. Yeah.
So, okay, so we step back, or we've kind of got a sense of what cash flow might be in our financial plan. How then do you go about setting up a portfolio or a savings and investment plan to get you where you need to be?
Yeah, great question. So we kind of think about, I think about it like a funnel, you know, to something kind of pushing us towards the right spot. So here at Foster Group, Kent, I think you did a financial perspectives on our lifeboat, or the idea of a lifeboat.
A couple weeks ago, we called it Am I Okay?
Yes, Am I Okay? That'd be a good one to reference here. So I'll briefly say, understanding your cash flow needs will help us develop an expected withdrawal from your portfolio. And we think it's wise to have somewhere between 6 and 8 years of withdrawal needs protected in preservation assets, cash, bonds. And so that's a good starting point. So maybe that's 40% of your portfolio. So we're calculating a real number. You know, maybe it's $500,000. Yeah. But we transition that to a percentage, and we say, well, at a minimum, we think this percentage of your portfolio needs to be in cash and bonds to protect those things so that if markets misbehave, you can draw on those. And then the other side is a risk element, which is not a bad word. It's a good word that, stocks provide growth, and we may need a certain amount of growth for funds to last. So bringing those two things together to land on the right allocation for a client by the time they retire is what we're after.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Usually for most people, what we discover is there's a variety of allocations that can work. It's not like there's one perfect one. There's a range. And some people will choose to maybe press a little bit more aggressive. Some people are just going to want to be a little bit more conservative. But the key there is that there's enough of that fixed income and cash to cover, you said, the 6 to 8 years, which I love, because, you know, in market history, what you see is, hey, the worst case scenario for a market, the global stock market, let's say going from peak to trough to full recovery, has been 7 years. So all we're saying there is, hey, we'd like to cover a worst case scenario, at least a worst case scenario in history. And we don't anticipate, you know, when or if that's going to happen. But the point is to provide peace of mind and that liquidity should something negative happen as you get into those retirement years.
Absolutely.
So think about that. So we're building the portfolio, and sometimes we look at, okay, at this point in time, we think it's going to need to be this kind of an allocation. But back that up, 10 years before retirement, what happens in the last 10 years, let's say, as you kind of are saving and investing in focusing on this point in the future?
Yeah. I call it, you want to avoid a trigger point decision, meaning by the time I retire, we might have worked together with a client to decide you probably want to be 60% stock, 40% bond, or around there. We don't want to wait till the last minute or last year or two to pull the trigger to get it there. That's a dangerous approach, because what if markets are misbehaving when we get there? That might stall your ability to retire. Or what if there's a big tax event to make that transition? That's going to be very uncomfortable. So what we want to do is work our way there over the course of 5 to 10 years, and gradually slide the portfolio that direction, so that by the time you retire, the portfolio is already there, and we're not taking unnecessary risk. I mean, my own dad retired in 2007. That was a really rough year to retire, right? If you're going to retire in up markets, that's great. Flat markets, it may be okay, and down is less than ideal. And luckily, he worked with an advisor at the time that prepared his portfolio before that point. He was not too aggressive when he got there, waiting to make a big transition right at retirement. So his advisor was able to look at him and say, you can still retire. The bonds are there. You can lean into those right now. And I'm thankful for that. But those things do happen. You want to avoid those scenarios.
Yeah, the timing question. If you can kind of average yourself into the right portfolio.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, when you get into retirement, actually, you're averaging out. You're selling, you know, a small little bit at a time to provide the income you need.
For sure.
That's good. So, okay, so let's go to the flip on the other side of that. Now we're in retirement, and how are people going to monitor their spending, or monitor, hey, is this plan working? How will they know?
I love that, because this is an ongoing conversation. It's not a one-and-done decision, right?
Yeah.
So there's a couple things to be thinking about. One, again, back to the beginning, monitoring cash flows. How has life changed? How have our expenses changed? You know, if you need more money for care, or you've decided to travel more, that may work just fine. But as far as, you know, your plan being able to absorb that, but we might want to adjust the allocation to protect a little more of those cash flows back to that lifeboat. And then we're going to monitor that with your plan. So we build a financial plan. We have all your income sources and expenses in there, and we have an expected withdrawal rate for each year. And so we, you know, at Foster Group, we can run a distribution report and say, have our withdrawals been relatively close to what's in the plan? And I think that relatively close is important. We don't need precision. We need to know over 1, 3, and 5 years, on average, we're close to the mark. And that allows us to know, yep, this is working, or, oh, we're spending a little more and it's been consistent and that might be okay, but we might want to adjust the portfolio, or maybe it's okay, but it can't last forever. So let's talk about it and be in front of that.
Yeah,
so.
I love that monitoring aspect, because like you said, it doesn't need to be precisely on the number. You're just looking for, hey, is this going to cause a prop, or we're spending way more than we anticipated?
Yeah.
And if it's like on maybe one thing, like, well, we bought a big car, we didn't expect, you know, a nicer car, whatever. Okay, that's a one-time thing. But if it's every month or every year, now that really compounds out in the future, and that may need some adjustment.
For sure.
In terms of how we think about that. Those are not always the most fun conversations.
No.
More fun conversations are people who get into retirement and they're just spending less for whatever reason. So I think about that. Some people, when they get ready to retire and take money from the portfolio, we've seen it. That's just an emotionally different thing to do. So I wanted to ask you, we've talked about this, you know, what are some of the things you see tripping people up as they actually enter into that retirement period?
Yeah, well, I think that's a great question. I think there's a couple, and one's not financial at all. I think it's hard for people to come up with what's next. What's their next purpose? And I would encourage people, just like you're gonna transition the portfolio over 5 to 10 years, start thinking about how do I want to have purpose when I retire? Because that can be really hard. If you don't have something to retire to when it comes to purpose, we've seen people struggle with that. So that's one. The second thing is that people struggle to stop saving. They struggle to start spending out of their portfolio.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that it's important for us advisors, that's where we can really play a significant role, is to reassure from that objective view. I mean, the funny part is we aren't immune to that emotion.
Right. It just feels wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
We've had advisors retire from here who advise people through that. And I worked with one of them, and 2 weeks from retirement, their plan looked great, but we had to have lunch, and he said to me, am I really okay to do this? Am I really okay to pull this money out of my portfolio? And it's like, yeah. So, it's important to know, like, that's a very emotional thing, and sometimes you need that reassurance from that advisor. Also, I think if you're a couple, often, I say 99% of couples I work with, one spouse, divide and conquer. One kind of manages the finances day to day, and the other's doing a lot of other things. When you go to retire, it's often the one that manages the finances that struggle. Mm. And I've seen many times that spouse step in who's very smart, very attuned to what's going on, but just be able to be that voice of wisdom there too, that emotional, like, hey, we're okay, So it's just interesting. Lean into those relationships, lean into your advisor relationship for that reassurance.
I think this is just a great example of the power of habit. Mm-hmm. Somebody's gotten into the habit, a very good habit, of saving
for
and
sure.
investing and watching that and guarding that retirement asset or whatever the future asset is. And so that being actually reversing the habit and taking money the other direction, it just feels wrong.
For sure.
We had this experience with our children. We were saving for their college education using 529 plans. I've talked to other clients who have the same problem. You put these money into these plans and then they go to college and it's time to take them out. And you're like, maybe I don't want to take it because it's just, I've got the habit now. And you tell yourself stories, basically, about what I'm going to do or not do. So, I think that conversations with advisors, conversations between spouses, just kind of revisiting that plan so that you have a sense of confidence that, hey, we have planned for this. We can do it. And then those regular reviews. So I think that's another big part of it. When you're meeting with someone, once or twice a year, just to show it's happening, it's working, basically according to plan.
Yeah, and sometimes you need a few extra connection points those first couple of years of retirement. That's great, that's what we're here for. Lean into that, so.
Yeah. Any other challenges you can think of? Just kind of like, this has been hard.
Oh man, that's a great question. I think maybe not a recognized one, it's just that recognition and really thinking through brainstorming the future. I've seen, back to that life will change. I think a lot of people enter retirement thinking it's going to be super consistent. And it's like, it's going to be different. And to pencil out those bucket list items and those goals that you put off, because I think people, I alluded to this right at the beginning, spending is often higher earlier, right?
Yeah.
And it's because those things come along. That's awesome. We want to see people do that, but let's be realistic about those things. Because as you're going through pulling money out of the portfolio, if you're surprising yourself with the number, it's already hard to do it, and then the number's surprisingly high, it's even harder. And so let's just get that all on the table and reassure everybody that's doable. So
yeah, those are good. Good pieces of advice. This is kind of like scratching the surface of preparing for retirement and retirement income. But I think these are really important things to get the conversation started. So Marcus, thanks for walking us through some of those things today. Thanks for joining us today. For those who are listening or watching, we plan discussions like these to help you think about important financial issues and to provide what we hope leads to an educated optimism about the future generally and your future specifically. You know, if you'd like to talk with a Foster Group advisor about your retirement income plans, especially if you're not confident in how you've estimated your future income needs or how much really you can take safely from the portfolio you have today, please contact us at fostergrp.com. We'd love to have that conversation. Hey, and if you're a podcast listener, please consider liking us or giving us a review on your podcast app. We're always hoping to help more people learn and live with an educated optimism. Marcus, again, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
The previous presentation by Foster Group was intended for general information purposes only. No portion of the presentation serves as the receipt of, or as a substitute for, personalized investment advice from Foster Group or any other investment professional of your choosing. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk, and it should not be assumed that future performance of any specific investment or investment strategy, or any non-investment related or planning services, discussion, or content, will be profitable, be suitable for your portfolio or individual situation, or prove successful. Foster Group is neither a law firm nor accounting firm, and no portion of its services should be construed as legal or accounting advice. No portion of the content should be construed by a client or prospective client as a guarantee that he or she will experience a certain level of results if Foster Group is engaged, or continues to be engaged, to provide investment advisory services. A copy of Foster Group's current written disclosure brochure discussing our advisory services and fees is available upon request or at www.fostergrp.com/disclosures.